I am very pleased to welcome Dani McLean to the studio. Her writing has appeared in Slate.com, Ebony, and City Beat, and she's contributing writer at The Nation. She has received the James Aronson Award for Social Justice Journalism and awards from the National Association of Black Journalists and of the National Lesbian and Gay Journalists Association. She has been named 2020 Writer in Residence at the Cincinnati Public Library's Library Foundation. And, most wonderfully, her first book has been published. It is titled, We Live for the We, The Political Power of Black Motherhood. Dani, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
We have wonderful things to talk about.
Yes.
Lots of good things going on in your life. So, I really found We Live for the We to be a personal generosity on your part because you share a lot about your relationship with Isabel, or Iz, as you call her, in the book, and certainly found many things that those of us who have mothered would relate to. It's also a very well-researched, comprehensive book, and with not only statistics, but on-the-ground interviews with Black mothers who are raising their children in a hostile culture. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, all that being true, I really came away from the book with an appreciation of the strengths of Black mothers. And I was particularly interested in your idea of not motherhood, but to mother, and the idea of the we live for the we. So would you talk a little bit about those, how those things connect up and what they mean in your life?
Sure. So the idea of focusing on mothering as a verb as opposed to the noun mother, that really came to me through the work of a book called Revolutionary Mothering, which came out a few years ago. It's an anthology, and in the introduction, the co-editors talk about the importance of mothering as nurturing and caring, the activity of mothering, which really anyone could do. Grandparents, you know, there are a lot of children in their grandparents' care, or aunties can play an incredible role mothering. Or there can be an uncle, or, you know, a masculine identified person or gender nonconforming person who doesn't identify with the kind of feminine qualities associated with motherhood, but who's providing that role in a young person's life. And so I really appreciate that book for introducing that framework to me, and it's something that I wanted to use in my own book. And I think that it's especially important to talk about with regard to Black communities because, you know, so often we're parenting and we're forming family relationships that fall outside of these traditional understandings of what is a family, the nuclear family unit with two parents and 2.5 kids and all that. So, you know, often we are in these kind of informal kinship networks or the extended family where the person who's providing that mothering is not necessarily the biological mother. And that connects to, as you mentioned, the title of the book is We Live for the We. The title came from an interview that I did with an organizer in Oakland, California named Kat Brooks. Kat has worked for a long time with families who have loved ones who were victimized by state violence. So she came to kind of national attention after Oscar Grant was killed in Oakland, California in January of 2009. Kat provided a lot of support to Oscar Grant's family as they tried to navigate the criminal justice system to get justice for, you know, some degree of justice for their slain child. At the time that I interviewed her, Kat was running for mayor of Oakland. And she, at the time, her daughter was 12 years old. And she talked about how, you know, because so much of Kat's work is about advocacy for parents and family members, you know, she's an organizer, an activist. She often has her daughter at rallies and community meetings and, you know, these community events. She said that sometimes she hears from her 12-year-old, Mom, could we just have a dinner that's a quiet dinner with just the two of us? Could we go to Disneyland? Can we do these things that, you know, these more traditional families do that I observe? And Kat was, you know, of course they do those kinds of things. But Kat said, I tell my daughter all the time, and it's harsh, but we don't live for the I, we live for the we. And as soon as she said that, I just knew. I was like, I think that's the title of the book, because it echoed so much of both what I had heard from the other interviews that I did, but also what I had read in the kind of scholarship on Black motherhood from people like sociologist Patricia Hill Collins or Audre Lorde, or, you know, people who have been writing about Black motherhood for decades. There was this idea that Black mothering is not just about creating something wonderful for your kind of individual family network, but that there's a real sense of being connected to a larger community, to not only your own child, but your child's peers. and feeling responsibility, you know, outside of just that small unit. And so I think those two ideas are related. You know, we can mother young people who are in the community at large. And I think those are two important ways to talk about, you know, how Black mothers, Black grandmothers are really on the kind of cutting edge of thinking about innovative ways to parent.
I think your book is wonderful in terms of taking the proverb, it takes a village, and showing us how that actually works. So in your own life, one of the insights in the book that I think is so pertinent is that white parents sometimes, but not necessarily, talk with their children about race. And it may be in that old sort of offhanded way, well, I'm colorblind. Well,
exactly.
No, it doesn't ring true.
Exactly.
So the child knows that. Black parents often speak with their children about race. So did you learn strategies or just thoughts in general or specifically in how you want to include that in your life with Isabel?
Thank you for raising that point. I mean, the research shows that parents of color, not just Black parents, but parents of color are much more likely to talk to their kids about race, really because we have to, because we know that our children are going to face discrimination on the basis of race or ethnicity, and we need to prepare them for how to respond and how to maintain a sense of self and dignity while being on the receiving end of discrimination and mistreatment. My hope is that I make no claims to be in a position to coach white parents on how to do better talking to their own kids about race, but I hope that this book offers strategies to white parents or gets them at least thinking about the importance of talking about race and oppression and power with their kids, because as you said, their children see it, even if the parents take this kind of colorblind approach. You know, I think what I learned from the parents that I interviewed in terms of what I'd like to incorporate in my own parenting, I just want to always be honest with Isabel. I want to meet her where she is. So an example of that would be around the Christmas holidays. We were watching A Charlie Brown Christmas, and I hadn't watched it in many years. And we were watching it, and she seemed to be enjoying it. And then later that night when I was helping her brush teeth and put on pajamas, she said, "Mom, all of Charlie Brown's friends were white." And I said, "Yeah, that's a good point. What do you think about that?" She said, "That's not good." Her words were, "That's not good. You can be brown." I said, "Yeah, you know, you can be. We are." And then I took it a step further and said, "You know, not only can you be brown, but think about the kids in your class at preschool." She goes to a preschool that has a pretty diverse student body with kids who are, you know, white and Black, but also Middle Eastern and Asian. And, you know, so I tried to connect what she was seeing in pop culture to her own experience and really applaud, you know, what she's exposed to in our real lives. And so I think another parent, maybe a white parent, might just get scared in that moment and freeze up and say, "Oh, well, I guess Charlie Brown was just around white kids. There's nothing wrong with that." It's like, no, let's like slow down and really think about the real life implications of watching this celebrated children's show in which there's no diversity in the friend group and what kids absorb about, you know, what's okay then in their own lives. So what I learned was just the importance of really being honest, not shying away from moments that might feel uncomfortable, and just meeting the kid where that kid is.
Because they'll be honest with you.
They will be. But then if you meet their honesty with fear and kind of clenching up, then they'll stop being honest with
you. Yes. Yes.
Because they're going to do what you model for them.
Well, I do want to talk a little bit about, of course, your artist in residency at the Library Foundation. Just, I guess, tell me what your thoughts are about it. Do you have aspirations there? What do you want to bring to it?
Well, I'm so honored to have been selected as the writer in residence this year. Our library is very unique in that it offers this opportunity to community-based writers to come in and do this residency and be a kind of ambassador to the community. You know, I have the opportunity to do programming all year, so I'll be hosting writing workshops. The first one is in May, and it's related. It's actually related to the themes of parenting and mothering that I address in the book. But then there will be other writing workshops throughout the year on reporting. What is it that reporters do, and how do we go about news gathering? How do you write an op-ed or a letter to the editor? And then what are different ways that we can publish books, whether we go through a kind of New York publisher like I did, or if you self-publish? So these are kind of offerings that I'll be making available to the community. I'm also hosting a podcast where I'll be interviewing authors and other literary figures in the city and I'm hosting office hours at different library branches throughout the city. So there are all different ways that I'll be available to interface with community members who are curious about my work, curious about journalism, or maybe they're engaged in their own writing projects and want to talk through a challenge with me. And all of that information is available on the library's website on the Writer in Residence page.
It's delightful to talk with you tonight, and we certainly wish you the best with your book, your artist in residency, and most of all with Isobel.
Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure.
I've been talking with Dani McLean about her book, We Live for the We, The Political Power of Black Motherhood, and about being the Library Foundation's Artist in Residence for 2020. You'll find more information about both at wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. I'm Barbara Gray.